This is an interview with Bill Bach. The date is 8/16/89. The recording is being done at the Counseling Center, Michigan State University. And Bill, if you would just go down that first sheet there.
Okay, my name is Bill Bach. I am 32 years old and a senior at Michigan State. My major is elementary education. My subject major is social studies, and my home address is 1631B Spartan Village, East Lansing, Michigan, 48823.
Let's start with a basic description of where you grew up, a little bit about your background, a description of your hometown, whether you grew up on a farm or in an urban area and so forth, just a visualization of these things.
I grew up in northeastern Michigan in a town called Alpena, which is on Lake Huron. In what I thought of as a town, but as I get out and around a little bit, it's considered a rural area. It's a town of, well, its population has gone down recently, but it's probably 15,000 to 18,000 people in the town. But you know, there were a lot of farms around us, but I considered myself a quote unquote city boy, in Alpena. So, I mean, down in this area, you think of it as rural, but I didn't because, you know, I lived in town. It was a very small town. But
describe the house, the street.
Most of my life I grew up on right next door to a grocery store that my dad owned, which was great. I mean, the house was connected to the grocery store, a little corner mom-and-pop store on the corner right by the railroad tracks. I mean, the train was probably 30 feet from my house, and that was, you know, it was great. There were a lot of friends, a lot of kids in the neighborhood. All the candy and pop I wanted, you know, for free from my dad's store. And that's where I spent most of my life, from age 5 to age 21 or 22.
Yeah. Did you work in the store?
No. In fact, I have two sisters. And since then, I have a brother who's much younger than I am. But there, for most of my life, there were three of us kids. And my younger sister worked in the store, and my mother did. But my older sister and I just refused to. I'm not sure why.
It wasn't a question of necessity where your father was putting pressure on you. Look, I need your help in the store in order
no.
to survive.
No. And I could have, you know, I could have worked there to earn extra money if I wanted to. I mean, my parents paid my younger sister to work there, and she did. But I just I couldn't be bothered, you know.
Can you describe some of the types in the town? Were they mostly farmers? Who would come into the store, for example?
Oh, gosh. Because of the times, my dad closed the store in 1973 out of necessity. He found that he could, what he was buying from his wholesale supplier cost him more money than you could buy retail from the supermarket. It was just, you know, the usual thing that happens, phasing out of small independently owned businesses because of the supermarket chains. But the types who came in were the old folks, mostly in the area, who had grown up. The store was there for, you know, 100 years or thereabouts, and it was the old timers. A lot of there was a high Polish population. People would come in. I can remember as a kid a lot of old people speaking Polish. In fact, the butcher, when my dad bought the store, the butcher came along with the store. He'd been there all his life, and he was this old Polish man, and that was it. That and neighborhood kids who came in to buy candy.
Well, do you have a rather nostalgic memory of those times?
Very. Yeah. I remember things like my dad. My dad was known for the best meat in town. I mean, he made his own sausage and bologna and, you know, ground hamburger and all that fresh. And butchers from supermarkets, when they didn't have what customers wanted, would send them to my dad's store. I can remember big kettles boiling with sausage and all the machines and the choppers and the knives and everything. Yeah, I still have dreams about those days.
Do you think it's possible to recapture the simplicity of that way of life in your life?
Well, let me put it this way: as a novelty, if I was say independently wealthy and I wanted to do it, just you know for the memory, but to do it to earn a living, I seriously doubt it.
Well, at one level there are these nice memories. At another level, there's the reality of making this thing go and slowly being squeezed out by the big wholesaler or the big supermarkets.
Yeah.
And your dad must have felt that crunch.
Yeah. For the last few years that he owned the store, in fact, he started doing building and carpenter work, my mom started running the store, and he would go out and, well, it's what he's still doing today, remodeling people's houses for them. He's kind of a jack of all trades. He does a little plumbing, a little wiring, and building. And he started doing that, I think, to supplement the income from the store for the last 3 or 4 years that he owned the store, until it finally became apparent. I mean, as each year went by, the shelves were getting barer and barer, until eventually he just went out of business and solely went to doing carpenter work. But yeah, it wasn't. I don't want to say an end of an era, but personally, it was, you know, for me and for my family.
Do you, to what extent do you identify your current goals and aspirations to an attitude that your father had? Is there a connection there in some way?
I really don't think so. My dad and I are pretty much opposites. I'm lucky if I can pound a nail. And he's the kind of guy that if there's something wrong with his car, he tears it apart and fixes it. You know, if the furnace breaks down, he tears it apart and fixes it. And he builds things, and he's good with his hands, and he has a very, black and white view of things, and very sure of himself. And I'm not mechanically inclined. We're opposites, I guess.
Well, would that black and white philosophy that he used in the practical side of his life extend into his philosophy of life? Did he tend to make judgments of people that were black and white, or judgments of situations?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. He's a good man, and he would call himself a good man, but he can point to people who are not good people too. You know, what do I want to say? Absolutes. I mean, some things are wrong, some things are right. And
you consider yourself as more of a philosophic person than your dad.
Yeah. Yeah. I've read a lot all my life, and I don't know where that came from, because neither one of my parents reads. I've never seen my dad open up a book. Never. Or read a magazine. I've seen him read newspapers. That's about it. And my mother doesn't. Well, she reads, romance novels, that type of thing. But as a kid, there was. I've wondered often, because my two sisters are the same way. Never read a book, and I've read, voraciously since I was a kid.
And you don't know where this interest came from.
No, no idea. No idea.
Maybe inspiration from a school teacher or something.
That could be. Yeah, but if that's so, it happened before I have memory of it.
Yeah. Did you do well in the early phases of school?
I did very well. I did very well. And up and through junior high and high school, I think I became a classic underachiever, very lazy, and I think I became bored and only did what I needed to do to get by in the final high school years. Yeah.
I have yet to interview a single student who said that his or her high school education was challenging. So I take it from what you've just said that you apparently fit the norm, that your high school was not particularly challenging. Either that, or you were lazy for some other reason. Maybe there were challenging teachers there and you didn't avail yourself of that.
Exactly. I can't fault the high school. There were some very good teachers there. I fault myself. Maybe I was made to be that way by previous schooling. I don't know. But I think I was selective in high school. I loved literature and history. And I devoted about all my attention to that at the expense of science and math and some of the other things that I just kind of suffered through, to get by. But one high school teacher in particular, who I'm still in contact with, affected me. I don't want to say he gave me some of the political views and sociological views that I have today, but he sure sparked them in me.
In view of the fact that you're going into teaching, you must have a very clear perception of what a good teacher ought to do or ought to be. So can you be a little bit more critical in your analysis of this particular teacher? What was it that really caused him to inspire you?
Well, first, I think it's interesting that I think a lot of adults, and particularly teachers, don't understand is that kids, even young kids, know when a teacher is good and when a teacher is bad. They might not put it in those words or even formulate it consciously, but they know when a teacher cares and when a teacher is just going through the motions. This particular teacher, I think it was just the time, being an adolescent and suddenly awakening to political ideas and philosophical ideas and discovering those things. Maybe it's just that he happened to be there at that time. But as far as his teaching skills, I went back and visited his classroom as recently as 2 years ago. And he just retired this year, so he was...
From what you said, you're implying that a good teacher is one who cares on some emotional level for his students.
Yeah, well,
that would seem to be more applicable at the lower level than at the upper level. You can have a brilliant mathematician at the graduate school level who doesn't give a hoot about the emotional stability of the students,
mm-hmm.
who puts the formulas
right.
on the board, explains them clearly, and the students learn.
Yeah.
But you're saying, could you comment on that?
Are we still talking about this particular guy?
Talking about, apparently he struck an emotional chord there with you, particularly if he altered your political views.
We didn't alter them. I guess what I'm saying is I didn't really have any up to that point. Again, my family is, I guess I would call them apolitical. My parents never voted, still don't vote. There was never any discussion of issues in the house. If I ask my dad now how he feels about certain things, and I find that he does have views, and I can categorize him in a certain place on the political spectrum. Anyway, this what I liked about this guy, when I went back to visit him a couple years ago, he was as fresh or even more enthusiastic than he was when I had him 12 years before. He was still taking classes. He was excited about computers. He had computerized his whole grading system. We're talking 2 years before retirement, and this guy is still interested and active in what he's doing. And to me, that's important, because a lot of people at that point, and well before that point, a lot of teachers are just coasting and waiting for retirement, and they're burned out, and they really don't care. And when I had him, and he must have run across this with a lot of kids, you have these adolescents who suddenly are discovering things and that they think they're the first to think of or the first to realize, and he had the patience to stay after class and discuss ideas and to not just discount these things by saying, well, that's old hat, or, he took us seriously, I guess, or he took me seriously, and I appreciated that.
Well, from what you said so far, it seems as though you have managed to educate yourself. You haven't done it by yourself entirely, but I mean, you have succeeded in getting an education in spite of your family background and because of other strong influences, and you've cited one, this teacher.
Well, I don't want to, see, that sounds bad. I don't want to say in spite of my family background, because my parents were, I did well in school right from the beginning. From as long as I can remember, I did well. And my parents, I can remember my dad used to give me $1 for every A on my report card and encourage me to do well in school. But as far as, I guess I had the impression that if I hadn't done as well, that they wouldn't have been upset about it. I don't want to make it sound at all like I come from some deprived background of ignorant people, because that's not the case. It's just...
So your father certainly recognized the merit of getting good grades.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and my dad is a very intelligent man. He grew up very poor, and I often think that if only he'd had the opportunity to go on to college and do something. He's got a lot of interests that were never developed, and he is a very, very intelligent man. I mean, he's run his own business. He was a manager of a major department store chain. Travel all around the country or around the Midwest, as a younger man. Did this all on without a high school diploma even. So he's, there's a lot of ability there that because of his situation growing up very poor that he couldn't develop. And I'm the first in my family to go to college, to go to the university, and I almost didn't do it, but I'm doing it now, and he's excited about that. So, if rather than saying in spite of my family, I think that's wrong, because they've been very supportive. I mean, there wasn't a lot of reading in my house, or there wasn't a lot of encouragement, but that's because they didn't know, I think. Not that they didn't care, but that they didn't know about it.
You're how old?
32.
32.
Yeah.
Do you feel that you are clear about your goals now?
I wrestle with that one every day. I still have doubts about what I want to be when I grow up. I mean, I've made one career switch, and I already have said that I don't plan on teaching elementary school for the rest of my life. I want to be involved in education. But I want to teach. I don't know how long I want to teach for, and I don't know what I want to do after that. Whether I want to go into administration or some type of educational research, I'd love to write children's books. I'm interested in storytelling and folk songs and things like that. So, I see a lot of possibility out there that I didn't see a few years ago when I was kind of considered myself stuck in a job.
You said you had one career switch. What was the first career?
I was a radio disc jockey.
Can you talk a little bit about that? How long you were a disc jockey? And
well, I was a disc jockey for 11 years, from age 19 on, I guess, and 9.5 years at one station. And it's something I wouldn't have stuck with. It's something I fell into, and that the novelty and fun wore off after about probably 3 or 4 years, by which time I had, you know, a wife and family, and a whole lot of bills. so it was a job, you know. When you do that, or when I did that, you run into people who think that it's very glamorous, but it's just a job.
Well, what kind of a jockey were you? What kind of music? What kind of programs?
It was a large FM station. It was a commercial FM. The music was, They came up with a different name for our format every other month. Basically, it was mostly top 40 mixed in with adult contemporary. When you come from an area up where I come from, up north, there aren't a lot of stations, and you find that you have to hit a bland middle ground with what you play to satisfy everybody a little bit, rather than specializing. I mean, you won't find a soul station up there, or album rock station. You just won't find them because you have to please too many people. So, and I was the morning jock, you know, what they consider the morning drive, the good spot. But it just got old. Teaching is what I wanted to do.
Teaching.
Yeah.
But I sense in you you're certainly not obsessed with one subject or one direction. I sense somebody who is searching here, and there's a desire apparently still with you to continue with the search. I mean, it's not like you're going to become as you just said, you don't want to necessarily become a teacher for the rest of your life. But since, how did you rationalize this search with marriage and children? I mean, there's a basic conflict there, because it's a lot tougher to carry on the search and to do the kind of exploring that you want to do, and at the same time acquire all of these middle class values.
That's right, and I feel often feel guilty about that I've kind of dragged my wife, and I have two sons, and dragged them along with me. Quit a job, sold our house, pulled my kids out of school, took them away from their cousins and their grandparents. You know, I mean, we're a very close-knit family on my side and my wife's side up in Alpena. Dragged them away from that and brought them down here to this strange place. But I don't, I think it's worth it, and not worth it just for me, but it's worth it for the kids. They've grown. They went through 2 or 3 months or maybe 6 months of agonizing, missing home and hating the new school. To now, my youngest, who we had the most problem with, has said several times to me lately, "I don't want to move back to Alpena. There's nothing to do up there." And we live in Spartan Village, which I don't know if you're familiar with, but there's people from all over, literally all over the world, and they have friends of every You name the ethnic background or the skin color. I mean, and this is something that we didn't find up in Alpena at all. Very homogeneous up there. So I think that it's worth it in that respect. But I do have to say that I sat around when I got out of high school. Teaching was just not something practical to spend the money on a college education. There were no jobs at that time. And of course, the pendulum swung back, and in the mid '80s, I started reading articles about the coming teacher shortage, and the upheaval in education. And I started, you know, moping and kind of saying, "Gee whiz, you know, I wish it wasn't too late for me. I wish that I had gone and gotten a degree." And you know, and I did this for a couple years until my wife finally said, "Look, either go back to school or shut up, because I don't want to hear it anymore." So I you know, explained to her what that would mean and asked if she was willing to do it, and she's gone along 100%, and you know, I'm very thankful for that, because it would have been very valid for her to say, "Look, you're not going to upset our lives like that. We have a job and a house and everything, and our family's here, and this is where we're going to stay." And realistically, I would have had to say, "Okay, you know, you're right," but she's chosen to go along with me.
She sounds practical. Is she the practical one in the family?
We take turns being practical and impractical. when I get too far out in left field, she kind of pulls me back, you know, and I do the same for her. I don't know. If she was too practical, I think she wouldn't have wanted to do this.
There was an aspect of your fantasies which appealed to her.
Yeah. She grew up, she had never... been out of Alpena, never. She lived in the same house till the day we got married, and had never gone anywhere else. And I was real reticent about how she could handle it, you know. And she's handled it very well.
How is she liking the Spartan Village now?
She likes it a lot. She wishes that I could get a teaching job in this area so we could stay, which isn't likely. But we both feel now that we can go anywhere. At least, if not enjoy it, at least, you know, survive it.
Was there any particular question that caught your eye? I'm not conducting a scientific survey here. I want to get somebody talking about the thing or the question which he feels most articulate about.
Yeah, when I read number 9 on page 2, question about the me generation and so forth, that kind of clicked, and I thought, gee, I could probably talk for you know, 10 or 15 minutes on that, which I won't do, but...
That's fine.
Do you want to read the question, or do you want...
No, that's all right. Well, I get all the time I read in the popular journals that this is the me generation. They have less sensitivity to major issues. They're not concerned with civil rights. They just... The standard rap. They want to get out there and march into their $35,000 a year job as a businessman or an engineer or a doctor, whatever it is, and the hell with society. But on the other hand, I look back at the 60s and I see that a lot of the so-called hippies are now selling insurance. So is this generation more realistic in that sense, or is it simply less idealistic? What's going on here?
Personally, you know, being the age that I am, I feel influenced by the 60s. I'm younger than most of the, you know, that group, but that's the era that influenced me. And I had always thought of, from growing up in always reading and hearing in those days about campus protest and, you know, Kent State, one thing or another. I always thought of the university as a place that was on the cutting edge as far as progressive thinking and activism and so forth. And I guess I just assumed that's the way universities were. And it was shocking to me when I came to school. What shocked me, I guess, was the fact that every other student I met was in marketing or accounting or, you know, packaging. And I found that they were the ones I came in contact with. It's hard to generalize because the campus population is large, and I don't know that many people. But I call them kids, and my fellow students, but I call them kids, and I do find that a lot of almost a kind of scoffing at Well, for example, the recent sit-in by the black students, the reactions, and I talked about it to a lot of students. I would bring it up, and the reaction I got from students ranged from not caring about it to really putting it down, and not understanding it, not liking it, complaining because it inconvenienced them because they couldn't go in and pick up their loan checks or something, and it shocked me. It really did.
Why? These are the children of people who supposedly came from an idealistic background, aren't they?
I don't know if the
what happened.
I don't know if those people from the '60s were all the way we think of them as being, or if it was just a small group that made a lot of noise. You talk about the former radicals selling insurance now. I think in the '60s there were two different groups that we lumped together. One was the group that was active in civil rights, in politics, on a practical level, the people who were involved in the marches and the bus rides and the sit-ins and so forth. And the other group was basically hedonistic, the dope smokers, who really didn't, when you read about it nowadays, they were racist. A lot of them, they didn't care about the black struggle. They were basically interested in their own personal freedom and what they thought at the time was their own intellectual or spiritual development with drugs, through drugs. So I don't think we can lump all the '60s people together. But I do find that the students I talk to tend to be here as if this is a trade school, and they want to put in their time and get that piece of paper that says they've done what they have to do to get the job, and they're not really here to learn about the great thoughts and the great thinkers and all the things that I always assumed that university life was about.
Well, if you find this is an essentially negative attitude you're describing on the part of many, it has nothing to do with a humanistic search for values which you cannot pin down. I mean, the values that you're talking about are ones which you would explore through courses in philosophy, the social sciences, things which which can't be neatly packaged in the same way that an engineer would approach his subject matter,
right,
et cetera.
Right. I'm not saying that people who are teaching engineering courses or marketing or packaging should approach it from a philosophical viewpoint. I guess my disappointment is that there are so many students wanting to go into those fields rather than spend the time they have here studying different philosophies and wanting to find out what great thinkers have thought and maybe formulate something to base their life on, not just their careers or their jobs, but their whole life.
But aren't these the people who are saying to themselves, I can't really change anything outside of my selection of a job and my immediate family, so what's the point? Why should I study Rousseau's political theories if my political effectiveness is so feeble that it's not going to bring about change anyway? Is there a lot of indifference? What are these people who are going into packaging and business and medicine, and have they thrown in the towel in the way that some of the students of the '60s had not?
I don't even think they, from the people I've talked to, I don't think they've even considered the concept of wanting to change things and then given up on it. I just don't think they've thought about it. I just don't think they've thought beyond what styles of clothes they want to be able to buy and how to get that BMW or Mercedes and make a lot of bucks. I just don't think they've even considered that there may be problems in the world that they could deal with or that they could affect. I don't think that they're choosing to do what they're doing out of a sense of hopelessness or not being able to affect things. I don't think they've even considered it.
Yeah.
From the people I've talked to. Again, I'm generalizing because they tell me that things are changing, that that pendulum swings back and forth, and that we're supposedly entering a new era of progress or change. And I think in universities you're seeing, a few protests and a few small groups of people doing things, and maybe that's a sign of things to come. But I guess what irritates me is why are we going over the same old territory again? I mean, we did this all in the 60s. Why are we doing it all again? The U.S. history course I had, and I asked if it, at the community college I attended, if this was typical, and it was, ended basically in the mid-50s. We didn't study civil rights movement. We didn't study Vietnam. We didn't study Watergate. And I was in a class with 18, 19, 20-year-old kids who didn't know. They knew Vietnam. They didn't know where Vietnam was or what happened. They didn't know about the protesting in the country and the upheaval. They didn't know about the civil rights movement. They didn't know. I mean, this was at a time when we were seriously considering, or President Reagan was talking about feeling the testing the waters for sending troops down to Nicaragua. And people around me saying, yeah, let's go fight the communists. Let's go to Nicaragua. Why aren't we learning from those? I mean, it seems to me we're starting all over with the racism on campuses, the racism in the cities. We're saying, gosh, we should do something about these things. Didn't we do this 30 years ago? I mean, if we don't teach kids coming into college about what we've already gone through, how are they going to know? We're just going to keep repeating the same things. And in 30 years, we'll be doing it all over again in some other, you know, talking about going to war in some other jungle or going through civil rights marches and riots again. I have a problem with that.
Well, if we're one of the most poorly educated of the Western industrialized countries, certainly part of the explanation of why this is occurring falls back on lousy education at the secondary school level.
Or you can just say lousy education in general.
Yeah.
And again, I find it funny, planning on being a teacher myself, not funny but ironic that our society tends to blame the teachers, and we have a society that when asked, do you value education, we all reply, oh yes, we do value education, it's important, because that's the proper thing to say. But when we're asked to put our money where our mouths are, then it's something different. We have a new quote-unquote education president whose one of his first acts was to propose a cut in the education budget. You know, we say one thing and do another. So I don't know. Maybe we only have ourselves to blame for the problems that we have.
Let's shift from this general discussion, which is interesting, to something a little bit more personal. What did you want to be when you were younger, when you were in grammar school or junior high or high school? Did you shift a lot?
I wanted to be a teacher. Probably around junior high, I started wanting to be a teacher. I was always in awe. I had a few bad teachers coming, you know, through the ranks. Everybody does, I think. But I was always in awe of teachers, and I always had a lot of respect for them, just simply because they seemed to know so much and were willing to tell me or to help me learn it. And to me, that was, you know, very valuable. And I remember being shocked in junior high and I always assumed they made a lot of money too, because they must make a lot of money because they're so smart. You know, I always thought that. And then in junior high, I had an English teacher who told the class what he made. In what teachers in general made, and I couldn't believe it. I just couldn't believe that they were so poorly paid. But I still wanted to teach, and still do. And the reason I didn't was a combination of things. There not being teaching jobs when I got out of high school. Teaching was just happened to be there was a glut of teachers at the time.
How are you going to put up with the stupid administrations, the too many kids in the class, having to coach the soccer team in addition to the five other subjects, four of which you hadn't bargained for,
yeah,
et cetera, et cetera. Are you going to be able to put up with all that crap?
I hope so. I'll put up with it, you know, and I'll again, being idealistic, I'll work to change too, and work however I can through the teachers' union or whatever I can do. And again, I don't plan on teaching forever. You know, I can see myself being tired of teaching in 5 or 6 or 8 or 10 years, and you know, maybe you'll be interviewing me then about my new career. I don't know.
Well, you mentioned earlier an interest in writing.
Yeah.
Do you like to write?
I do, yeah, but I'm scared of it. I just had a language arts class, a teaching methods class, where we discussed this too, where I can remember in the early grades, and I have my oldest son is the same way, writing stories all the time in the early grades when we were required to write a story, when kids would fill up a half a page, I would fill up two or three pages, my oldest son is the same way. Somewhere between then and now, writing was turned into a chore by the teachers I had, by being assigned topics, by being assigned genres and things like that. So I'm kind of scared of writing now, I doubt my abilities in it, but there are times that I think that I could write a pretty good children's book.
Well, have you ever tried writing short stories or poetry and that sort of thing and sending it out for publication?
No, I've written a lot that I've tucked away, you know, on shelves in my house, but I've never tried to publish anything.
Why do you have this low evaluation of your own writing abilities?
I don't know.
You've never exposed it, really.
I don't know. I remember my fourth grade teacher, when they would send the report cards home, I can still remember that she wrote on my report card that I was a very good writer and writing to my parents that they should encourage my writing because I showed a lot of ability. And I've always kind of carried that with me, thinking, well, somebody believes I can write, even if it was a fourth grade teacher.
Don't you feel obliged? Doesn't your sense of morality tell you that you ought to develop a talent which you know you have?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, the same way it tells me that I should, you know, get out of a job that's basically meaningless and do something that I think is important, which is teaching.
So. Which is what you did when you left your job as a DJ.
Yeah. I picture myself after I've, you know, after I have a teaching job and I'm settled back in again, and maybe have my master's degree and have summers to do what I want. I picture myself then sitting down and writing. Now is, you know, really busy time.
You don't feel the obsession of an artist, which is to create his or her own world. The painter who has the compulsion to go over to the studio, the writer who must write his 6 hours a day.
No, see, I don't think I'm an artist. I think, to an extent, I think that writing is inspiration, but I think it's mostly work. It's perfecting a craft. I don't think you sit with a pen in your hand and wait to be struck, you know, with a great inspiration, and then words start flowing through you or anything like that. I don't think that's true. I think you start with a pretty good idea and craft it and work at it, and it takes time.
I'm just hopping all over the ballpark here.
Okay.
But my mind flashes back to other interviews I've had, and I know that I've gotten some good material, and it's nice to have a comparison. Did you go through a freshman year, a freshman identity crisis, where suddenly you were free of your parents for the first time, you're out of prison, and there you are, you can do anything for the first time at the age of 19, and you know what happens on this campus. A lot of these freshmen go absolutely nuts for the first couple of terms. They drink too much, they party all the time, their grade point average drops.
Yeah.
They don't even sleep in their dorm room. You know, the standard thing. Did you go through that?
When I was a freshman in college?
Yeah.
Well, or when I was a freshman in college and when I was 19, because
there are two different things. I don't know whether you started college way back when and then dropped out and then became a disc jockey, or what happened there. You have gone to college now just in one block of time.
Yeah.
So you were never required to live in a freshman dorm then, or
no,
were you?
No.
Are you sorry you missed all that? Can you talk about what it means to make that change? Or if you haven't done it, then maybe you don't have a perspective.
Well, I can relate it to just being. I think I was 19 when I did move out and get an apartment, and it was pretty much, you know, the debauchery you describe. I can't relate it to going to school, but. I can say that when I did go to school, at the time I went to school, I had a wife and two kids and a house and a lot of responsibilities and had been working for 11, 12 years and was responsible for funding my own education, you know. So I found that I went to school and sat usually in the first or second row in the middle and got my money's worth out of every class. And I would go home and say to my wife, I don't understand these kids, you know, these kids that are, they're living with their parents. This was at Alpena Community College. They're living with their parents. They don't have any jobs. Their only responsibility is to come to school, and they come to school unprepared and hope that they can get a C in the class, you know, and that kind of a thing. And here I was working full-time with a family, plus going to school full-time, and just the difference there. I used to think if all I had to do was go to school, I'd breeze through this stuff.
How would you make the comparison? That's Alpena Community College.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're at Michigan State with a different type of student. Now how do you sum up their attitudes?
I don't think the students are that different. I really don't think they are. They're probably more serious here, more studious, because it costs a lot more money to go here than it does, you know, to go to a community college. So that may have an effect. I say they're not that different. I guess I mean in their behavior, their general behavior. But as far as studies, I think students that I've seen here, the younger students, do buckle down more because it's more competitive and it's more expensive here. So yeah, I think they do study more.
Well, you're what are you, a senior now, or what?
Well,
what level?
I'm a senior. I've just. Halfway through the summer, I became a senior. I accrued enough credits.
When will you be qualified to teach?
Hopefully, I should have my certificate next June.
Well, so you never really went through that rite of passage defined by debauchery at the local state university where you went crazy.
No.
You just went crazy when you left home when you got your first apartment and job.
Right.
Yeah. Is that an inevitable rite of passage? Does anyone get through that period smoothly?
I think there are always some kids. I shouldn't call them kids. There are always some people who manage to make it through high school without being involved in any drinking or anything like that, who are very studious. I don't know what makes them that way. If it's genetic, or their home life, or what. So I think there are kids, or people that go through college their first couple of years who maybe don't get wrapped up in it that much. But I think probably by and large, it's kind of a culture shock to suddenly be living in a dorm. And if everybody, I can see the tendency, if everybody around you is partying all the time, then, you know, it's just human nature to want to belong, that maybe possibly people who've never done it before would start.
So where do you see yourself in 10 years?
I don't know where precisely. Hopefully somewhere in Michigan, although there aren't, right now there aren't a lot of teaching jobs in Michigan. Somewhere in Michigan, in this area wouldn't be bad.
But describe what position you would hope to have, what you would hope to have achieved by that point. 10 years has gone by. You're looking back now. Let's say the best of all possible worlds has occurred and that you've been able to achieve what you
just
have wanted to achieve.
Just now, professionally, what, you mean? Or?
Professionally and in terms of your relationships to other people, your family, your kids, everything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, in 10 years, hopefully I'll have a master's degree. Hopefully I'll have... My family and I will have had the opportunity to spend a little bit of time overseas somewhere, which is something we want to do. Hopefully I'll have had 10 years of or 9 years of successful teaching and either be, I don't know what I want to do after teaching. If I want to go into administration or some type of governmental job, something, definitely doing something in education. And the best of all possible worlds, maybe working on my fifth children's book. I don't know, living somewhere in the country, but not too far from the city. I love to garden, love to cook, doing stuff like that in my free time, and having my family be healthy, and my kids will be well into their teens. You know, closing in on 20 by then. Yeah. So hopefully they'll be alive. And I'm really not interested, and I said it in high school, and I still feel the same way. Thankfully, I still feel the same way. I'm not interested in making tons of money. If I was, I wouldn't be going into teaching. I am interested in a good quality of life, which to me means the things I've said. Having a good, healthy family, a good place to live, doing the things we like to do, and having enough that we're not burdened by, bills that we can't pay and stuff like that. But I don't have any great desire to own a fancy car or a, huge house or anything like that.
You don't feel a strong urge to do something in the order of Mother Teresa, to save the world, to espouse some noble cause. It's just a very small percentage of people who do feel that way, and some of them act on it.
No, I do feel that way, and I think that's the driving force behind everything behind going into teaching, because I've given a lot of thought to what I can do. In fact, you asked if I'm sure what I want to do, and I said I think about it every day is, what I want to be when I grow up, really. And do I really want to teach? I was just thinking the other day, going into political science and law would have really been interesting. But looking at the way that I can make a difference, teaching seemed a good way for me to do it. And I guess that's idealistic. You talk to a lot of veteran teachers who say that your idealism doesn't last too long. But it seems to me that an individual person can only do so much, and that I like kids. I like being around kids, and I think that I can make a difference if the however long I teach, if the couple hundred or whatever kids that who come through my classes grow up to be sane, caring, responsible citizens, then I've done a little bit toward changing the world, I think.
But in terms of focusing in on a specific ethnic group, which might be underprivileged, that hasn't been a primary
I'm not sure what you
concern.
mean, like
Well,
going
conceivably, you could
traveling to India and
you can go teach in a ghetto area. You can you can deal essentially with the offspring of upper middle class whites in a nice school like East Lansing Public High
yeah.
School or something.
I'd like to strike a middle ground somewhere in there. I've talked to teachers who taught in areas. Well, I had a college instructor who taught high school history in the Midland area, which is an area that's well off. And he said he felt completely useless. He didn't feel needed at all. And there was a lot of pressure from parents and so forth. So I think it's important to me just to keep my enthusiasm up to teach somewhere where I do feel needed and where I feel like I can make a difference. Yet I wouldn't want to teach somewhere where things are so hopeless that you feel like you're beating your head against a wall. So I guess in that respect I'm kind of selfish.
Does your wife work?
Yeah, she's worked at a lot of different jobs. She's had to work a lot since I went to school, of course. She has a high school education, and she's working. She just got a job as an assistant teacher in a daycare center, a Montessori daycare center. So that'll be good. She's worked at a lot of places, like she's worked at 7-Eleven and Wendy's and places like that, kind of get by jobs,
Does she want to continue her education?
She does, yeah. Now she does. In fact, she has said that she wants to, when I finish with school, that she would like to go to school. And now lately, she just doesn't want to wait till I finish. She wants to take some classes, and I think that's great.
Start off at LCC or something.
Yeah.
Let me, I, well that, you know, that, I just made me think of something. Most kids who go from high school directly into college, and then from college into their job, and then shortly thereafter or before they get married, are following a pattern which is a lot of people endorse. No one questions it. Don't you think, honestly, that you have had an advantage in the sense that your career goals are based on having filtered a lot of things through your thinking on a philosophic level, I mean, you are very clear about why you want to teach. Now, you may waver from that, but still, don't you have an extreme advantage over the kid who comes from directly out of high school, whose father has said, I want you to be an engineer. He may be, maybe he's talented in mathematics or sciences. But he hasn't allowed any of that. He doesn't know his own person yet. You know your own person. And it seems to me that you have an incredible advantage over most of the students that you're sitting in classes with. Is my perception off base here? I mean, how do you feel about that?
I don't think it's an incredible advantage. I wouldn't recommend that people wait 12 years between high school and college. It would be nice if people could wait, say, 2 years or 3 years and then go to college, the reasons you mentioned. I think you do so much maturing between 18 and, say, 20, 21 or 22. And it does give you time to think about what you want to do, plus to be out in the quote-unquote real world and see what things are like. The disadvantage to that is once you get a job and get settled into something, I think as each year passes, you have that much less of a probability of going back to college. Waiting 12 years to do it was crazy, really. I finally had to sit down and say, okay, so it's going to take me 4 years, so I'll be teaching when I'm 33 years old. I'll have my degree and starting a new career. In 4 years, I'm going to be 33 years old anyway. You know, why not do something? Why not go to school between now and then? I had to rationalize it that way. I think there is an advantage of getting out of high school and taking, you know, it used to be back, again, going back to the 60s, where nobody looked at you funny if you got out of college or got out of high school and bummed around the country or hitchhiked or went to Europe or, you know, to, as they used to say, to find yourself. And I think things are different now, but I think it would be nice if kids could do that, to take some, at least 2 or 3 years in between.
There's something crazy here because at the age of 19 or 20, you're really not qualified to do much of anything. You haven't been immersed in a particular job for very long. Maybe you've made hamburgers at Wendy's or something, but you haven't really been trained to participate in a really sophisticated job. And you're supposed to make this decision, selecting a major, picking a field, and then hopefully, if everything falls into place, you'll fall into that field, and yet you're not qualified to do that.
So then you go through your college education, and you get married, and you get a job, and settle down, and suddenly you find out you're 30 years old, and you hate your job, and you know you suddenly realize, you know, you're trapped, and this isn't what you want to do. Yeah, I can see that. That's a problem, a definite problem. And again, I see a lot of kids treating college as a trade school, where they're here and they're not interested. I'm in a lot of classes with a bunch of stenographers who pull out their pads and pencils, and when the professor opens his or her mouth or writes things on the board, they write it down. And without giving it a thought, it's just like, okay, I have to write this down, I have to memorize it, I have to give it back on a test and keep that grade point high. And then that means I've learned. And I think there's a gap in there. I don't see that where memorizing things is learning. And I guess the attitude that I would like to see more people go to college with is forget about the pressures, forget about the career pressures and the money and everything. You're there and just use it as the opportunity to discover things about yourself and to take advantage of what's offered as far as discovering new ideas. Not to go there and say, okay, I'm going to line up the next 4 years, and at the end of this, I'm going to have a degree in packaging, so I can make, you know, $40,000 a year, and I have to take this class and then this class and keep my grade point to this certain level.
Is there a part of you that could continue this exploration indefinitely?
Yeah, I see. I told my wife the other day, I see myself going to school till the day I die. Once I get my teaching degree, I'd love to take classes in photography and you know, music lessons, and there's a ton of things I want to do, and I And I see myself, once I realized that I wasn't trapped in that job and I could go back to school and do things, it's like the only limits there are the limits I impose on myself. I mean, there's definitely responsibility to my family, and I have to consider their needs and what they, you know, what they want also. Boy, I'm sure not here, you know, I don't want when I'm dead for people to say, well, gee, he was really unhappy and confused, but hey, he was making 50 grand a year. You know, I'd rather, what's the old cliche? I'd rather see a happy and well-adjusted ditch digger than a neurotic lawyer or doctor. And I guess that's how I feel.
Well, you know, you said earlier that it would be a good thing for these, if some of these young kids had a 2 or 3 year intern where they could explore on some general level before signing up for the packaging course. And that it's almost tragic for them to go through a 4 year program and then to discover at the age of 28 or 30 that they're in a field they didn't really wish to pursue. And I agree with that. You have avoided that, except do you look back on your experiences as a DJ and all the other jobs that you've had along the pike? Do you see those as having been learning experiences, or do you? Are they parts of your past that you would just as soon forget?
Oh, no. No, they're learning experiences, definitely. I think I did as far as, you know, being, I had the usual jobs, you know, making pizzas and delivering pizzas and security guard and the usual things you do. But as far as being a disc jockey, I think I did it for too long. I mean, I think with that job, I hit a point where, as I said, after 3 or 4 or 5 years, I had done basically everything, and it was just, I spent the next 5 or 6 years just repeating, you know, being stagnant, I think. And with that job, it was a case of either moving on to a big market and being serious about being in radio or getting out of it. And I didn't like it well enough to try to make a career, you know, move up the ladder and move to a big market and make money and fame and all that. I just didn't care, so. But I look at it all as learning experience, but I think I say that, and then I have to say that you have to look at what you've done as learning experience, just to, you know, to keep your sanity or to not feel desperate.
How would you grade the profs generally that you've had here?
I've had probably 2 or 3 that I would say were excellent. Let me talk about Alpena Community College shortly. Quickly, I went there and I think that the quality of instruction there is equal to, and in some cases superior to, what I found here. I don't know if that's surprising or not. It's an excellent college. The few here that I found to be excellent, again, were the ones who were genuinely concerned and really loved their topic and loved teaching it and were enthusiastic about it. And I don't mean that they were, you know, bouncy and bubbly and jumping around the room, and although one in particular was like that, but they were the ones who were really cared, liked what they were teaching, liked the students, were concerned about us. I've had a couple that were really poor, and the rest fall in between.
Like every other profession.
Yeah, yeah.
A few good ones at the top, some bad apples, and most people fit into that jelly mass in the middle.
Yeah.
Comment on the rate at which most students are forced to absorb knowledge.
Okay, I think it is too fast and too intense here. And, you know, MSU is supposedly switching to a semester program in 92, I think it is. And I'm in favor of that. I know the majority of students and faculty aren't in favor of it, but I am, because I find in 10 weeks there's so much information. And you know, I've done well in my classes. I mean, if you look at my grade point, it's a good grade point, and I've gotten good grades. But it's remembering a whole load of stuff long enough to pass a test and then moving on to the next subject. And if you ask me about a class that I had last term, I can't really remember this stuff because I'm too inundated with material right now to remember what went before. Again, it's the old theory of the professor up there dispensing knowledge, and you absorb it and then regurgitate it, and supposedly you've learned it. And I think I would like to see an easier pace. Maybe that's just college life in general.